I think our North Star always pointed towards hyper-Bitcoinization, doing the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing. And even if people take and take and take and try to steer us wrong or do, like, literally just still focus on that main North Star. And I think it's really hard to knock someone off a peg or two when they're just focused in one direction. And I think that's what separates us. People that come through PubLab have to be doing epic things. If they're not doing epic things, they should probably leave. And I mean that in the nicest way possible. But unless you're doing something epic, you shouldn't be here. I want you to get to success, whatever that means for you. And if you don't know what success is, that's fine. It could take time. But the goal is for you to get to success. And if that's raising money, if that's getting a grant, if that's doing a crowdfund, if that's getting a job, if that's building a masterpiece, like, we want to help you get there. And so we just keep it very simple.
Being open source means anyone can independently review the code. If it was closed source, nobody could verify the security. I think it's essential for a program of this nature to be open source. Satoshi Nakamoto. Welcome back to What Is Your Bitcoin Story podcast with your host Gigi. And today I'm thrilled to be joined by Carr Gonzalez on this episode. Carr is the co-founder of PlebLab, a revolutionary hackerspace in Austin, Texas, that serves as a hub for developers, hackers, creatives, and builders of open source software and hardware. As a space that fosters collaboration, skill building, and innovation, PlebLab is a testament to Carr's commitment to empowering individuals to turn seemingly impossible ideas into reality. Tune in as we dive into Carr's remarkable story, discovering his experience with Bitcoin, the impact of PlebLab on Bitcoin community, and the future of decentralized innovation. Welcome to the show, Carr.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, Gigi.
It's an absolute pleasure, and thank you for taking the time out of your day to hop on and share your story down the rabbit hole. So I guess, like we do with all other guests, we'll hit it off. So where does your Bitcoin journey begin, Carr?
Yeah, it actually begins in probably 2010. I was into Slashdot. It was a tech website that I used to go onto every now and then, and I saw the Bitcoin link there and clicked on it and didn't pay much attention after that, but I had heard about it. That was my first touch point. And then it was, I think, in 2014, I was working at a web design company called A Small Orange, and we were having our morning meeting or whatever it was. And I think it was 2014, 2015, I forget which year, but one of the guys brought up Bitcoin. And I think it was just right around the Mt. Gox thing or something. I forget how it played out. He started saying all these words, and I was like completely fascinated by it. And almost immediately, I went up to him right after the meeting and was like, and he was a weird guy. He was like, you could tell he was a Bitcoiner. I went up to him. I was like, dude, what is this Bitcoin? Like, where can I learn more about it? Because I remember hearing about it in 2010 on Slashdot, but not really paying attention to it. Just thinking it was just some kind of, you know, meme or something. Yeah. And then it wasn't until that guy started talking. He sent me over the Joe Rogan video with Andreas Antonopoulos. And I watched that video, and Andreas was talking about how Bitcoin was going to change the world, was going to change internet. He was talking about streaming sats for video content, and he was just talking about everything and anything, autonomous, you know, machine-to-machine payments. When I heard him say these things, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then he started talking about all the years of research that had gone into it. Anyways, it was that Joe Rogan podcast, right? Almost immediately, I went home. I was married at the time, and I talked to my wife, and I was like, hey, I'm going to get some Bitcoin. I'm going to start doing research and buy some Bitcoin. And it was around that time that I want to say it was 2015, and it was probably the summer. And I remember paying, it was like $250 a coin or something like that. And it was at that time I got a Keep Key. There were these things called Keep Keys. And they were like a hardware wallet, but you could hold like Litecoin, Doge, and all these other things. And that was how I got into Bitcoin. And I really didn't pay attention to it at all for like 2 years after that in 2017. And then in 2017, it like shot through the roof. And I was like, oh crap, I have Bitcoin.
Where's that Keep Key?
I went back and looked at the Keep Key. Because at the time, I remember I didn't know how to buy Bitcoin. Like, I didn't know there was a Coinbase. I didn't know anything. I remember looking on eBay or like some of these other places to find how to buy Bitcoin, because I didn't know like there was things called exchanges. And it was
Did you end up buying it? On which exchange?
It was on Local Bitcoin.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just swapped gift cards for it. and they ended up coming after him. Good thing I bought it in 2015, because like 2 years later, I think it was 2017 or early 2018, they came after local Bitcoin, and you couldn't do that anymore. But yeah, that was my Bitcoin story. That's how I got into Bitcoin, was through this guy who was just being annoying that morning and talking about Bitcoin to everybody. And we were all just like, dude, shut up. And then I was like, no, man, tell me more. What is this? What is this currency you're talking about? And it can do what? And how am I going to be rich? And it was just all these kind of things.
Well, it's amazing that you actually listened, Karan, and went through with it, because similarly, there's a lot of guests that come on the show and they share, you know, similar experiences. Someone, you know, in the early 2010, 12, 13, you know, having this, you know, strange guy telling them about Bitcoin, and they were like, ah, like, whatever. It's just some digital internet money. You know, who cares about it? But the fact that you went through with it, and actually, more importantly, that you went straight into self-custody, not leaving your coins on an exchange, is pretty impressive. Because even today in 2024, you know, a lot of people that get their first, you know, stack of sats, they're leaving it on Coinbase, on Kraken, on everywhere. You know, even though we've had so many exchanges fail, and the biggest one in the most recent years with FTX going down, it's crazy that people still leave their coins on exchanges, and they treat it as, you know, as a bank. You know, I don't want to keep, you know, self-custody of it, which is kind of the first thing you should do with Bitcoin. You know, buy your Bitcoin, and if you're buying on exchange, straight away should go into self-custody. So it's nice that you kind of jump those hoops right from the get-go.
Yeah, I think for me, I've always been very practical when it comes to technology. Like, even when I was younger, I got into computers very early out of all my siblings, and was making websites for my friends, and, you know, had like a Dragon Ball Z website that made into like a community and stuff online, and hosted nice. Illegal videos on there and stuff. I was always doing something, right? And I think when I saw that opportunity, it was like, oh, okay. So I just get this hardware wallet. Like, it made sense to me that that's where you would store your Bitcoin, even though I was still learning about the ledger and the centralized nature of Bitcoin in itself, and all those different properties that we love about it now. But like, back then, I understood it as, okay, so I have this currency, needs to be stored here. Where do I get it from? Because I don't know how to make it, right? And and I remember that being a thing too, where I was like, wait, I can just make it on my computer, or I can make it on, and that really didn't click for me either. So it was literally like taking a chance, a leap of faith, and buying it on local Bitcoin that was like, oh, I can do that. I can get gift cards to Amazon and then just give them to this guy and hope that he sends me the Bitcoin to this address that's on my keep key. Like, to me, that didn't seem too hard. But looking back on it, now that you mention it, that was kind of difficult. But at the time, it all made sense to me, like the amount of Bitcoin that I was getting and then the address that I had it pasted to. And I think at that time, there was a lot of Andreas Antonopoulos videos where he was kind of explaining this in different segments. So I really do credit to him as being the guy that, because after that, I just would listen to anything and everything by that guy up until like he kind of went away in 21 or whatever it was. But I did meet him once.
I was going to say, Carl, what's your opinion about, I've recently had someone, because I also run, it's called Bitcoin Club Cyprus. It's the biggest and first Bitcoin community in Cyprus that I launched back in end of 2017. And recently in the group chat on Telegram, someone brought up, said, hey, guys, like, where is Andreas Antonopoulos? He's like fully gone off the radar. And it's a good question that I don't really have an answer. And, you know, in my opinion, I guess after so long, he kind of just decided to take some time out and, you know, who knows, work on something of his own. But what is your opinion? Why is Andreas kind of, you know, gone into the backstage?
I think looking back on it now, I didn't know back then what I know now working in the space, but he probably just got burnt out.
Probably.
Because there's only so much giving that you can do, and it taxes you mentally, emotionally, physically, and then monetarily as well too. So I remember at the time, I think it was like 2020 or 2018 or something, and they were making fun of him because he didn't have any Bitcoin. I think he had like maybe like less than a Bitcoin. And Roger Ver was attacking him online, and then everybody sent him Bitcoin because they were making fun of him. They were like, dude, you've been in Bitcoin for 7 years and you didn't accumulate anything. And he was like, well, I had to pay for conferences, and I would give people Bitcoin. He was just the most genuine, honest, like philanthropic Bitcoiner like I think the world had ever seen. And to me, I remember thinking at the time, I was like, wow, what a amazing person. Like, talk about like just doing the right thing. And yeah, and I think looking back on it now, he probably just got burnt out. And he probably just couldn't do any, like, it was somebody else's turn to kind of pick up that mantle.
No, for sure. I mean, working in the space and recently Matt Odell was saying how he feels just fully burnt out, like, but he's still ongoing. And I'm sure a lot of people in the space that are also traveling, it takes a toll on you, like Peter as well, which we were mentioning off the record, you know, Peter McCormack, like the reason he kind of shut down the show is he couldn't travel anymore. It takes too much energy and, you know, it sucks your soul dry. So at the end of the day, where we're all trying to build our own kind of zen and kind of our ideal environment by just pushing ourselves to the core and, God forbid, getting some disease and cancer and stuff, like, no Bitcoin in the world will help you with that. So yeah, I guess it's a very cutthroat industry to be in. But at the same time, if you manage to balance out this life and work balance, it's a great thing to be in. But I guess that's the hardest thing, you know, to balance it out, especially how Bitcoin in some circles is kind of also seen religious, because some people that are, you know, full on Bitcoin maxis, which I include myself in that camp too, I think about Bitcoin from the minute I wake up to the minute I go to sleep. And it's just kind of like, whole life is Bitcoin. On one hand, that's good. But on the other hand, you kind of like, your mind is just nonstop thinking about it, And that also isn't healthy. So, you know, it's important to have a balance in life.
Yeah, for sure. This year, like, I've just been gone full on sprint to doing everything. And I think I'm just coming up here. It was probably around the summer. I was like, okay, I need to get back my life, start taking back some of it. So lately I've been trying to do a lot of that. And as time moves further on, I'm going to start doing a little bit more of that. Start, like, you know, 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, whatever it is. And
shut down and finish.
Yeah, and really shut down and finish for the day and whatever that is. Because, you know, I've been going hard for since 2020, since the end of 2020. Yeah. And it shows what you can accomplish when you go hard every single day. But it's just not.
But we're not robots. We can't work 24/7.
Yeah, it's just not, like, good for you long term, because you reach a point where, you know, yeah. And I think maybe that's what some of the other guys you mentioned are probably going through, the same thing too.
True. So I want to bring back another exchange that you mentioned. So essentially localbitcoins.com, which, unfortunately, to the listeners right now that are new to Bitcoin and are questioning what is localbitcoins.com, unfortunately, it's not here anymore. Seems like local Bitcoins got burnt out too and perished away. But kind of local Bitcoins was an amazing space back in the day where you could just meet fellow people. May that be like in Carl's example with gift cards, but just like meeting someone at a cafe and getting your first bag of sats. And yeah, I guess people back in the day didn't even realize how non-KYC Bitcoin is so vitally important, where today with all these regulatory exchanges, and especially in Europe, where I was based until quite recently, now you need to provide everything, your full proof of ID and residency and tax number and literally nearly all the way down to your underwear size, which is insane for the fact that this tech was built on peer-to-peer technology, which should be, to a certain extent, anonymous. But I mean, it's permissionless. But then, you know, it kind of contradicts itself, where you need to give all of these permissions to get some sats. And most people, unfortunately, today going into Bitcoin, they're just so voluntarily giving up all their information, which is kind of the irony of it, where Bitcoin was made for the people to be the freedom money. But it's kind of like, you know, following down the tracks of banking, which is pretty sad.
Yeah, I think the war on attrition was the thing that people always said back in the day was how they were going to get us. They were just going to lean on us until we kind of, what you said, until we just started opting into some of these KYC and AML laws. I think the way to do it now, at least the way that I see it now, is literally start a Bitcoin company that can hold Bitcoin on its balance sheet. This is where I think entrepreneurship, just in Bitcoin in general, is just not, no one's tapping it the way they probably should be right now. Because you got to think about it. For the most part, a lot of the companies that needed to be made on the infrastructure side of things have already been made. Like, we already have Strike, we already have Unchained, we already have Zebedee, we have Voltage. Like, we have a lot of infrastructure companies that are already there. So when you look at that, there are probably those in mining companies will be the closest to the spigot, the money spigot. That is the Bitcoin mining that comes from sats where they come from. So you, as a builder or even just a Bitcoiner, you probably should figure out, how do I get access to that flow, to that sats flow? And how do I position myself somewhere near close to that spigot? And that's how I look at it when I'm working with companies or builders inside of PubLab, is like, are you making money on day one? If you're not, why? Like, why are you giving this stuff away? Like, we're Bitcoiners, we should be charging for things. We've reached the velocity of no longer giving this stuff away for free. Like, we don't need to convince anybody anymore. We won, right? So to me, the only way that I see to get non-KYC, non-AML Bitcoin is through selling things.
Providing a service or product.
Yeah, or a product. And I think not enough Bitcoiners realize that. Like, they're kind of just like sleeping on it right now. And it's like, even if you started something right now that was making you 100 sats a day for the next 365 days this year, and then next year it's making you 1,000 sats a day for the next three, like, just have a low time preference to building whatever it is you're building, and you're going to be making all sorts of sats flow. And I think when I talk to developers, they get that. They get that really, really, really well. But even the average pleb and the average Bitcoiner can sell something online that could be very profitable for them. So that's what I would say is, I think the way to make more Bitcoin now is by selling things and by starting a business. And that's how I see it all playing out now. Is like, I think if you want to go buy Bitcoin in low time preference kind of thing and into your 401k, all that stuff, that makes sense. Do it. But I think if you're really trying to, swing the pendulum for at least your stack, you should probably start a Bitcoin company. Do something on the side.
That makes a lot of sense. And at the same time, by you offering your service or your product, via accepting Bitcoin, as once again, going back to good old Peter, it's kind of the cheat code, right? You're going to get like a flock of all these Bitcoiners that are going to come to you, which will want to support you through whatever you're doing. So you're kind of already, differentiating yourself from competition, which, as we all know, and you know very well, Karen, that the startup scene, it's so cutthroat. It's so hard to kind of let it all make a profit, but break even with all of your running expenses that you have. So by offering, simply just integrating a Bitcoin payment channel, and today it's super easy thanks to the amazing guys at BTC Pay Server. You can set it up in a matter of an hour or two and accept both, on-chain or Lightning or, whatever that your customers prefer to pay in. And you essentially, there's no cost to you. There's no membership fee. There's no banking, maintenance fee. Why not offer both? You don't have to go to the full extreme of just being BTC only, which would be ideal, but most people still like having a choice. And if you're accepting sats for your service, then definitely the best advice would be don't convert them back to fiat. Keep them in sats. Just keep on stacking them. And as you said, Kara, fully agree with you. This is a long-term game. Have a low time preference, and in 4, 5, 10 years, those just a few sats that you're getting will be significant purchasing power compared to if you converted it back to your dollars, Japanese yen, or whatever it is. So I think that's some great advice.
Yeah, even like the people that start podcasts, right? Like, you can make money through Fountain, 10,000, 50,000 sats a month or whatever it's going to be. Yeah. And even that's just sitting on maybe you get that to a cold card or whatever. But to me, I think there's opportunities to make money in Bitcoin. And I think the plebs need to start thinking through that and figure out how they can, what they can sell, what service they can provide so they can make sats. Because at some point, we're going to get to a point where, and I firmly believe this is going to come true at some point here this decade or maybe early next decade, but people will refuse the dollar. Like, I won't want your dollars for a desk and blah, blah, blah. I'll be like, no, thanks. I want sats. Like, I want you to pay me in Bitcoin, or you're going to have to pay a much higher premium to get to spend those dollars. Like, this is where I don't think people are taking into account, like, just how valuable sats are. I think there's only probably one person who understands how valuable the sats are, and that's Michael Saylor. But other than him, who never has enough Bitcoin. Other than him, I'm joking. Other than him, I don't think anybody else really understands the value of sat creation.
Yeah.
And I think there's just not that many people looking at it. Even when you talk to some VCs in the space, they will literally try to get you focused just on making dollars. To me, I just scratch my head. I'm like, wow, like, this is bad advice you're giving startups. This is why a pleb lab,
Yeah, no, for sure. And, cash flow is the way they played the game for so long that they can't imagine now just stacking and preserving and increasing purchasing power by doing nothing, which is like an oxymoron. You know, you kind of always need to be, you know, investing into new things, diversifying, but that's kind of the worst thing you want to do on a Bitcoin standard, where you're kind of all of your diversified assets are depleting in value and just losing purchasing power, which actually the easiest thing, but at the same time, it's the hardest thing of just stacking and just leaving it there, not doing nothing, where we're in this consumerized world and kind of mindset of, you know, you got to keep on spending, and this whole, you know, kind of this lie that we're taught that we need to spend for the economy to be blossoming. Well, no, actually, we should be saving and preserving. But yeah, that's not how Keynesian economics works. But I guess, as you said, Carl, I truly also believe there will be a time in the future when most people will be willing and pushing to accept Bitcoin instead of any fiat payment, because it just won't make any sense. Or as you said, if you want to pay me in dollars or euros or pounds, whatever it is, you know, you're going to be paying 20-30% more to kind of offset that, you know, our headache of having to take that dirty fiat and convert it to sats.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, anybody that you do business with in the Bitcoin space, they're going to take those sats, right? Yeah. So if you're already kind of living in this kind of circular economy where you can buy your groceries or, you know, buy your milk or whatever it is, buy your meat in sats, then you're just going to take the harder money. And I think the ETFs, if they did one thing, they kind of leveled the price. We're not seeing too many crazy crashes like we did.
They stabilized it.
So if anything, it's a better stable coin than the US dollar at this point with upside.
True. But on the topic of ETFs, which I was covering a lot at the beginning of the year, of course, with the upcoming decision and what's going to happen. And then I left it out. But now that you mentioned ETFs, I want to hear your personal opinions. Are you pro or against ETFs, apart from stabilizing the price? I mean, do you think it's good that a lot of people are now buying ETFs thinking they're buying the real deal, but it's actually paper Bitcoin and kind of they're just buying basically a contract for difference, right? What is your take on it?
Yeah, I think I'm the only one because I've talked to a lot of people about it, and I might be the only one, at least in my circle, that thinks the ETFs are bad for Bitcoin.
Nice. I found someone that thinks the same way as I do. I like that comment.
I actually think it's gonna lead to some kind of fork at some point.
Oh yeah?
Because of that paperness that comes with running an ETF. Mm. I don't think they're the good guys. I'm sorry. I don't think BlackRock is the good guys. I think the people that are cheering it on are fiat Bitcoiners, and they're looking merely at fiat, and they're still stuck in that kind of paradigm, and that's okay. You know, I was there too at some point, but there's a lot of us hardcore believers that don't want that future. That, you know, that's not why I got into Bitcoin. I got into Bitcoin because I want hyper Bitcoinization. Mm. I want Bitcoin to succeed. And that's the only hill that I'm really willing to die on. I don't want to die on a hill, but if it comes down to it, I'll die on a Bitcoin hill. I don't want to die on an ETF hill. Like, you know, that makes no sense to me. It's like, this is not why I changed the course of my life to come cheer on BlackRock.
I like it.
It's totally the opposite of everything that Bitcoin stands for. And I think everybody has their take on it and stuff, but that's just my personal take. And I'm not going to budge from it.
I 100% agree, and I respect your decision. And yeah, I guess too many people are too hyped up about numbers go up and, oh, you know, there's going to be ETFs, all that money's going to flow in, and then, you know, Bitcoin's going to be at X amount of dollars, which is not the point of Bitcoin. Bitcoin's here to free up humanity, not to enslave it further. And then this whole Ponzi of the Wall Street, where kind of Wall Street, as we know from Bernie Madoff and all the other big crooks that have been kind of spinning their game and selling paper assets for decades, then now it's like, ooh, Bitcoin, the new boy on the block, let's sell some paper Bitcoin. And I've been mentioning this, you know, paper Bitcoin that probably most of the ETFs, because I think apart from one or two ETF providers, nobody discloses. And of course, the big boy BlackRock doesn't disclose their actual address where they're holding all those tens of thousands of Bitcoin. I was saying for a few months now that I wouldn't be surprised if they're selling paper Bitcoin. As we see at the moment of this recording, there's all these rumors speculating that, you know, Coinbase is not holding the Bitcoin that they say they are. They're limiting withdrawals, and all this chaos is going on. And it's kind of like, I was like, wow, like, I didn't think it's going to unravel this fast. I was thinking it'd take, you know, maybe a year, two, three. And here we are, like 6 months later, like all this. Yeah. And then the death cross came with the Forbes magazine putting, you know, Brian Armstrong on the cover.
I didn't see that. Wow.
Yeah, that came out this week. So yeah, he's taking the cover following the fates of SPF and CZ. I guess Brian should be having some cold sweats by seeing himself on the cover. It's a pretty interesting time. And you know, what's going to happen of it? I think if it really comes out that there is paper Bitcoin and Coinbase doesn't hold all that Bitcoin that they say they do, well, I guess, you know, price is going to tank. There's going to be another black swan event, as we saw with FTX, because a lot of people will be scared and think, you know, it's once again, Bitcoin's dead for the 195th time, which actually I don't mind. If the price tanks, I'm happy. Every time the price goes down, I get sats on a discount. So I don't get what all the people are, you know, crying when the price goes down. It's actually, you know, I can accumulate, my DCA stack gets higher. So yeah, it's interesting to see what will happen out of all of this. But I'm on the same side as you, Kar, that this is definitely not good for the overall ideology.
I think Brian Armstrong's a weird guy, right? Like he's somebody that when I think about who came in early and seized all opportunity. I know he went through Y Combinator too as well.
Yeah.
One of the first Bitcoin exchanges, along with like Jesse at Kraken. I think what's interesting to me is Brian always just played ball with those people. If anything, he really let it be known that he was willing to play ball. So I don't know how it's going to play out, but if there's anybody that would be willing to die on the sword, it's probably him. He's one of those guys. Like, he doesn't mind being the guy that no one agrees with for complying with the government. If anything, he wants to be governed harder, right? Like, so I can totally see that, where, you know, maybe he doesn't go the full on SPF route, but maybe he's able to at least admit that maybe he doesn't have all the Bitcoin before it gets too crazy.
Man. Yeah, well, let's see. It's to be seen what will happen. So I guess we'll leave the dark side of Bitcoin with the ETFs, and we'll go back to Kar's story. So 2017, Bitcoin pops off, hits that all-time high of 20K. What happens to Kar next? How does your journey lead to PlebLab?
Yeah, so I was working at the web design company, and they got bought out, I think, by HostGator. And then at that point, I started looking for just getting into IT. I was kind of done with the whole web development stuff. It wasn't near challenging anymore. At that point, I got a job at this small MSP here in Austin, and it was a company the size of like maybe like 15 people, and was there from, I think, 2016, somewhere around there, till I left in 2021 to go book Bitcoin full time. But that was an interesting place that I worked at, because I learned a lot of things, not only on the technical side, but was able to get some certs and all those things. But I think the thing that I really saw was how small companies were able to be built over the course of 3 to 4 or 5 years, and seeing how our boss at the time, the business owner, was able to really scale that thing. And by the time I left, they had sold, I think, for like 80 million or 100 million or something like that. So it was really cool to see that. And I think being a part of that was interesting. I think on my spare time, what I was doing was I was getting involved with Bitcoin and crypto, but I didn't know the difference. So I had bought Bitcoin back then, but I didn't know the difference between why Bitcoin, all these things. And so I started interviewing people on my podcast that I had back then. It was just called Thriller. And I started interviewing people. And then I would get invited to conferences, and I would go to conferences and interview people there. So I was interviewing people on the crypto side, on the Bitcoin side. But it was just like, it wasn't making sense to me. I was like, these can't be the same people. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And then in 2020, around that time, or no, 2018, I met Gary Leland, who runs a BitBlock Boom conference. Yep. And he was telling me, he's like, all that is shit coins. This is Bitcoin, and this is the difference. Come to my conference, and I'm going to show you the difference. So I would go to his conference, and he would show me the difference between Bitcoin and crypto. And I was like, I get it. And so it was around 2020. I made the full change into Bitcoin.
Full transition.
I hardly understood what the major differences here were, and how the crypto side wasn't what it was led to believe. Because I do think there's a group of people in the crypto space that do they don't lie to you, but they just don't tell you the whole truths when it comes to what's really going on behind the scenes. And they make it seem like they're a part of the ethos, but they're not. They're just LARPing. And so I kind of got susceptible to that. Anyways, long story short, got into Bitcoin, started Austin Bitcoin Club in, or bought the domain in March of 2021, and then started Austin Bitcoin Club in like June. And at that time I met my friends who are my friends now, Kyle and Keon, who helped me start Plub Lab. But at that time we were just doing a Bitcoin club once a month, and we would invite all the Bitcoiners, and it was getting really popular, and it was blowing up. This is right at the height of 2021 when everything was great. And it was around that time when COVID was going on too. So everybody was moving to Texas.
Yeah.
Plus all these Bitcoiners moving to Austin. So our meetup got really popular. And the vice president at the place that we were doing the our meetup at, he asked us if we wanted like an office so we could be put in, because a lot of we were just bringing our friends to this place called Capital Factory, and we were just telling people to show up. And
it was like
it was a co-working space, and okay, we were there pretty much all day. And because you got a free membership to Capital Factory for doing a meetup, but ours was the most successful meetup they've ever seen, because this is right around COVID, and so they was dead, and they didn't know why people were showing up the way they were for Bitcoin. And so we kind of got whatever we wanted. And at that time, we were also looking, me and Keon were talking about doing like a hacker house, like so we can just kind of do our own thing and not have to be in a co-working space. And it was around that time the vice president saw us, and he was like, well, if you want your own space, just ask for it. We'll give you your own space. We have a ton of offices that aren't being used. And we're like, cool, we'll take it. So we invited our friends at the time, who were a bunch of developers and people that were doing startups, and a lot of big names now, but back then they were nobodies. So a lot of the people that you probably know about now, like Super Testnet, like the guys from Mutiny, Keon from Stacker News, John from Zaprite, Michael from Oshi, who else was in there? Tristan from Bit Escrow, Topher, who was just Topher back then. And myself, I was working at TFTC at the time. And we were all just kind of in this small little office helping each other with our own projects. And it was at that time we realized like, oh, wow, there's something going on here. There's some magic in this room. Mm. And so Oshi was raising for their, we helped Michael do the Bitcoin block party, which ended up being like the biggest event the Bitcoin scene had ever seen since then. And it was in 2021, and we just invited everybody to Rainy Street, and we just threw a big old block party, and it was amazing. Wow. Like everybody was taking Bitcoin, and there was a party on the other side. And it was, to this day, I still think that was like the peak of like Plub Lab and what we were able to accomplish when you really put together, you know, a group of people. So after that, he shortly raised money after that. And then people were coming to me, Kyle and Keon, asking us if we were going to raise money. And we were just kind of like, for what? Like, we don't
have a shitcoin. We don't need to raise money here.
Yeah, we don't have anything to raise money for. But at the time, they wanted us to do this accelerator thing, which they thought we were an accelerator, this kind of hybrid of accelerator. And I don't think there was ever an accelerator in Bitcoin at that time. And so for Kyle, he was always willing to jump on the next mountain. We were just like, yeah, sure, we're going to do the accelerator. Let's go do it. That's how Plub Lab got formed. And we were able to raise a little small amount of money. We optimized for the co-working aspect of stuff instead of optimizing for the accelerator. So we screwed up right from the beginning. It was complete screw up. We should have optimized for the accelerator. But we optimized for co-working and deployed a lot of capital in that direction. And how to learn the hard way of like what it's like building in the bear market. Yeah. And then, well, since then we learned a lot of hard things. And now we finally are here in this Brazos location. Kyle stepped away in 2023 to take care of his family and stuff like that. He had kid and everything like that. And you can't really do that if you're doing a startup.
Yeah.
So he's been focused on that for the past 2 years, focused on his family and stuff. And then I'm over here doing Plub Lab, and it's getting easier in some ways, but it's also getting harder in other ways. But definitely progress. Like if anything, it's been nothing but up and to the right.
Consistent growth.
And I would say there's really no one else in the world that I can talk to about this, to be honest. There's no one else doing a similar thing. There's other people doing accelerators, but no one from like a community club level that I would say. So it's very unique. That's what I realized with my job. So a lot of what I do is just like talking to people in the lab, getting like a good understanding of what others want first, and then spending a lot of time discerning the differences in the direction that we should be headed and making sure that makes sense for everybody involved and not just myself. And I think that's what I've come to understand the past 2 years since kind of running Plub Lab is it's bigger than myself. It's not just me that I'm constantly thinking about. It's actually others before myself. And I think that's what kind of probably sets us apart from other places.
No, it's
having that kind of discernment to know that. I think.
No, it's incredible what you've done with Plub Lab. And I guess I wanted to ask, you sounded kind of, as you mentioned, you messed up on the accelerator instead of doing the co-working, but like, do you regret that decision now today? Or because the overall environment, everything would be different. Because as you said, Carl, there are other now Bitcoin accelerators. And I mean, I can't speak from experience, but I guess as an accelerator, it's a whole different ball game. You don't have this kind of community vibe where you're coming to the office and sitting down with all these beautiful minds creating different things. It's a whole different dynamic. We're investing into a company, pushing it, you know, far from a distance, and then having, you know, people which you're in the same room and this melting pot of ideas, which I think it's a much more like grassroots environment than kind of the accelerator, which is more kind of this VC kind of legacy market investment style.
Yeah, I think at the time I wasn't the main guy. I wasn't steering the ship. Like it wasn't what I didn't have the last word. So I remember at the time distinctly saying though, and we kind of go back and forth whenever me and Keon talk about this stuff, but I remember distinctly saying that we should optimize for revenue first. I remember being the only person in the room saying, I don't think it makes sense for us to be bleeding 5K or 10K a month. Like that makes no sense to me. Practically speaking, right? So maybe that's what I meant. Maybe I meant more, maybe not so much the co-working, but understanding that we can't, if we're going to try to break even every month, we just got to focus on that. We can't focus on like doing the accelerating plus this, plus this. And I think at the beginning, we focused on too many. We're spread ourselves too thin on too many different tasks. And that in itself is always the kind of death kiss by which startups die. So they try to do too many things instead of just doing one thing. I think the thing that helped us also was we did try all these things. So we were able to fail really fast on a lot of different initiatives. And then also I think having, like you said, having that co-working space was kind of like a hive mind in what worked and what didn't, because you're getting instant feedback. So I think long story short, I think if I had to do it all over again, there would be certain things I would optimize for and pull back on, and then certain things that I would do. I think what I've come, basically, since I've been doing this for 4 years now, Plub Lab, I've come to realize what I enjoy doing, and I actually enjoy doing the community stuff and the startup stuff. So that's what I enjoy doing. And so when I took over in 23, I optimized for the hacker space because I didn't know how to do co-working. I still don't know how to do co-working, but I can build a hacker space, and I think I can break even on it. And we're getting close to breaking even. But I know that if I keep going down this road, we will be there. The other thing I enjoy doing is the startup stuff. And I know there's been many companies, many developers, many creatives that have come through Plub Lab that have not only reached success, but have gone on and done amazing things just going through Plub Lab. So I know that's the second thing we do really well. And that's probably just to the core of who we are as individuals in the room. Because we're all very much similar like that in mind, where we all want to help get us to a higher level as far as raising the bar for each other.
Yeah.
So I do think that's the other thing that we do naturally well, where we don't even take into account that we're doing it, is the accelerating part. And I think when people see us from afar, they're like, well, how can a company like Yopaki come through Plub Lab, go off and raise all this money, and then go do a Bitcoin exchange in Mexico? Like, how are they able to do that? And I think it's because of the different people in the room that we're able, that we all move forward in helping this one company to get to success, right? And we do that for each other. And I think that's the thing that sets us apart from some of these other places that probably are all getting paid individually salaries, but they don't know that, you know, we were talking about earlier about it's stopping at 5 o'clock and it's stopping at six. But in reality, that doesn't exist for a group of individuals that are all collectively there for each other. So I think that's a second thing that we do really well is the accelerating part.
And I think two more points to add to it. I think important factors are the experience and the network, right? Like by being involved with so many people, you know, you've seen so many things and other people in the lab have seen so many things beforehand that someone new coming in and thinking should like go, you know, left or right can get a lot of advice before trying to go the route, which way is the most kind of the most efficient one. And the second one is this network part, as you said, with may not be, you know, getting, you know, connected to the right people to get the funding or to launch your exchange, to launch your product, whatever it is. I think network is a huge factor that people underestimate, because no matter how much money or experience you have, if you don't know the people to open that door for you, it's going to be a much longer route. And that's what I you know, it sounds like with PlebLab, it's kind of this magic potion machine where you come in and you have all the components, you brainstorm, you get it right, and then it just shoots you out as a cannon. And as you said, I mean, I haven't encountered anyone either that's kind of doing a similar thing, especially kind of on the lower level. And why do you think that is, Carl? Like, why are other like PlebLab 2.0, you know, kind of labs not popping up across the country and the globe? Or you think they will at some point?
I think, like, for me personally, I've talked to probably about six different individuals over the course of these past 2 years, and they're at different stages in trying to launch a similar thing to PlebLab. And I give them feedback, you know, this is like, it's cost me a lot of money, time and patience, but I, you know, I should be charging consulting, but I don't. I just give it away for free because I'd rather them save a year or two from avoiding some of the catastrophes that we had to go through. I couldn't imagine not giving that advice to somebody, like telling them, hey, water's this way. I know you want to go after the dry land over here, but don't, it's bad land. And focus on the water. And so I think there's probably about five or six that are at different stages that are going to be trying to do similar things to PlebLab. I think you asked the question is like, what's so special about what we do, or like, why is it that, I think for me, I've come to realize this, and it took me a really long time to have this amount of confidence. And I say this the most humble way as possible, is that I think our North Star has always been in the right place. Mm-hmm. And I think when you looked at us from the very beginning, we looked very crazy. Two guys, three guys that want to start a Bitcoin meetup in a park, basically. That was the first message Kyle told me. He's like, hey, we can just do it. I think I still have it in my Telegram. Like, hey, we can just do it from a park. And I always remember thinking, I was like, no, dude, we're not doing it in a park. We're going to do it at a place that we can, you know, we can grow in. And so I think us being very naive and being entrepreneurs ourselves, and then also just being Bitcoiners, I think our North Star always pointed towards hyper Bitcoinization, doing the right thing for the sake of doing the right thing. And even if people take and try to steer us wrong or do like literally just still focus on that main North Star. And I think it's really hard to knock someone off a peg or two when they're just focused in one direction. And I think that's what separates us. And I think when you look at some of these other places, when I talk to them, because a lot of them I'm good friends with, some of them will try to go in the direction of, we'll just get some legislators here or some senators and we'll try to get them here, or we'll get to these bigger Bitcoiners here and stuff like that. And there'll be some of them that will just be, oh, we're just going to work on the co-working stuff, and we're just going to try to get our co-working memberships up, and we're just going to, you know. And then there's other people that are doing things now where like, oh, we're going to be more crypto and we're going to have some crypto companies. And for us, it's always been like, no, we're just towards hyper Bitcoinization. People that come through PlebLab have to be doing epic things. If they're not doing epic things, they should probably leave. And I mean that in the nicest way possible, but unless you're doing something epic, you shouldn't be here. I want you to get to success, whatever that means for you. And if you don't know what success is, that's fine. It could take time, but the goal is for you to get to success. And if that's raising money, if that's getting a grant, if that's doing a crowdfund, if that's getting a job, if that's building a masterpiece, like, we want to help you get there. And so we just keep it very simple. And so when I think of the people that kind of have come through PlebLab and fall off or don't make it, it's those people that just don't fall in those buckets. That if that
they're
makes
missing
sense.
The component. No, it doesn't. And I think you mentioned something super important, Carl, which is kind of KISS, right? Keep it stupid simple, yeah. Right? Whenever you want to overcomplicate something, it never works out. And everybody, and especially in the crypto world, everybody wants to, you know, do the next most revolutionary thing, and they get lost in the whole, just let alone the scammy background of a lot of these companies that are just, you know, I see crypto as, crypto projects are here to just steal other people's sats, like, period. There's no other goal for it. But yeah, not to focus too much about the crypto talk, since we are a Bitcoin show. I think you put it very nicely and in the most humble way that, you know, if you're not working on something really big on Bitcoin, maybe this is not the right place, because yeah. We have you have scarce amount of time. You can't be dedicating the same amount of expertise and time to all projects. You really need to be, you know, choosing wisely who to focus on and who to really help. And even if it's as you said, it's free consulting, you're not paying for it, at least, well, I'd like to make you feel better, Carl, you are winning karma points, right? So if someone's not paying you with money, at least down the road it's going to come back to you, because, you know, I'm a deep believer, Carl, whatever you put out into the world, you're going to get the exact same back at you. So and it's all part of, you know, it must feel good, you know, even though you're not charging for it. Whenever you see those projects succeed or the individual, like, the feeling, it's just priceless, and the bond that you have with that person or that company, it's rock solid. Like, no money will make it justice. So, you know, it'd be nice to make some extra sats, but at the same time, I think you're doing a wonderful job. Just as we said at the beginning of the pod with Andreas Antonopoulos, he was giving so much free information to everyone, yeah. Even Bitcoin, just giving it all away. But, you know, just to try and get to that Bitcoin hybridization point, which at some point we are going to make it, because we're way past the polls of, is it going to happen? It's definitely going to happen. Now it's just a matter of time. When will it happen? And I hope it will happen in our lifetime, because I know at some point it will happen, but how long it'll take, we'll have to wait and see. But I think things are just speeding up in Bitcoin. If we kind of like zoom out and look at the macro, where we've come to in 15 years with this technology is mind-gobbling. Like, from being a worthless asset to being in the top 10 of the most, you know, highest market cap assets in the world in 15 years, not 50, not 500 years, in 15. Imagine, Carl, in the next 5, 10, 15 years, like, poof, like, people can't imagine it.
It's... Yeah, I think, your excitement got me pumped now. yeah, so pumped. No, I think you're 100% right. It's one of the things that I constantly say is, like, it's once in a millennia technology. Mm. Like, once in a millennia, like, it was like the Gutenberg press, right? And then it's like electricity, and yeah. It's like Bitcoin, right? Or like Svetsky likes to say, it's fire. Yeah. Teleportation, right? Like, literally once in a millennia technology. We were so lucky to be born during this time, and I don't think people realize just how important this is for humanity and to steer us in the right direction. I do want to say one last thing to kind of tie up that bow that we had earlier about the companies coming through. Like, there's a new company coming through right now called Jippy, and they came in as an education company, right? And we've been around long enough to know education companies in Bitcoin do not work. They don't make any money. No one cares for them. You know, they're just kind of, they don't work. So we were able to get him pivoted to more of a gamified kind of new thing that he's doing. And he's trying to build the first Pokemon Go on Bitcoin, which is really, really cool. Like, really, really epic, because you're going to have territories and they're going to be all over cities and stuff. So nice. When there's companies coming in, I think we just take a really thoughtful approach and a very intentional, each one of us, about helping that individual and making sure that they get to where they want to be with what they're building. Right? We don't want to influence too much. We want to help them get to what it is that person wants to be doing for the rest of their life. And I think once you kind of can do that, can start steering people in that direction, you can really get to what's really important and get Bitcoin really excited for other people, not just the people inside the lab, but people outside the lab that'll be using these things.
True.
So, yeah, I just wanted to share that as an example of, that's what kind of separates Pub Lab from some of these places, is that you'll find a home of people ready to help you. So
and what's really important, what you mentioned there, Carr, you lay out where you want to be, like where do you want to strive to, instead of what is the next goal for the next 3 months or the next 12 months. And I guess it's super hard for someone with an idea to even decide and come to a decision themselves. Where do I want to take this? Like, there's so many different options and venues and avenues, and they have no idea. So, you know, having that guidance and kind of a rough blueprint of like, you're here and, you know, this is where you want to be. I think it's super important, because just on the previous episode that I was recording earlier in the week with Derek Ross, we were talking about how important it is to set goals, right? A lot of us, especially startups, they start out a business or a project saying, you know, I'll do X and Y, but there is no set goals and parameters which you're working towards. And it's super important to have some kind of goalpost which you're aiming for to follow through with it. Because if you don't, sooner or later, you're either going to, you know, lose interest, you're going to burn yourself out, or the third one, you're going to burn through your stack and you won't have any more money to fund it. So I think that's a super important point that you laid out.
It's like what you said earlier about keep it simple. Yeah, it's like keep it very simple.
Yeah.
Like, pick a point and then just go straight towards it and don't stop. It's okay if you're wrong. You'll know as soon as you get halfway, you're like, shit, that's not water. That's actually a barren desert.
But at least you'll know what you're wrong about, right? Instead of doing three things and figuring out where did I go wrong.
Exactly. And then not only that, like everybody in the lab is checking in on each other, right? In one way or another with what they're building. Mm. So somebody will point it out, or, you know, there'll be a meeting of the minds, you know.
Which is another big differentiator compared to, you know, projects that get some funding and go out and work on their own. And they're kind of in this tunnel vision. They don't see, you know, what is wrong. When you're spending like day and night working on something, it's nice to have side influence and not just, you know, strangers, but people that you truly trust and that have no bias opinion. I think it's super, super special what you guys are building with Club Labs.
The other thing too is like we built out this community over the course of 4 years with other founders and other startups. And so there's been companies that have come through Club Lab or developers that have come through here. So if we ever need to get somebody else's opinion from the outside, we can just ping them and they can have a conversation with the new person in there and be like, oh yeah, you're building what? Okay, cool. Oh yeah, I went through a similar thing that you're going through right now. You probably should do this. And the only other place that I know that can do that is Y Combinator. Like that was back in the day when they were like super popular. I'm not sure what's going on with them now, but they were able to call on these other founders. And I think I'm not lying when I say this, I do think what we're creating here at Club Lab is something uniquely different that's never been created before. And I think that's where we're headed. And as long as we keep doing that, we'll be fine. And I firmly believe that, because that's kind of resolve that I've had for the past 4 years. So we're doing the right thing. Just keep headed in this direction and everything will work out. And if it doesn't, that's okay too. It will, because this is the direction we've always headed. And so I think when you start optimizing for things that are a little short-sighted or a little short-term or trying to seek the wrong thing, you're gonna hurt for it. And luckily, we took all those licks in the first couple of years. So we're not taking those. We don't need to take those licks anymore. We already know where we're headed.
So. Yeah, and I think it goes back to also like the timing. You know, Carr, I live my life with this kind of, if for you to really succeed in life, you need to have this trial combination of the right place, the right time, the right people. You know, if you're missing one of those three components, you're not getting maximum capacity out of it. And in your case with Club Labs, you were kind of in the right place in Austin, right at the right time when everybody was flocking in with the right people looking to build and the right place, right? So I think, you know, what you've achieved in 4 years is crazy. Like, it seems like you've been around for a decade and it's only been 4 years. Imagine in the next 5 years, you know, once we cross that golden barrier of 2030 that everybody's talking about, if we're still on Earth, right, by 2030, because that's not guaranteed either. But if we are on Earth, I mean, Pleb Lab is really going to be doing huge things, and future Bitcoin, you know, companies that are going to spring up, I think it's kind of going to be a no-brainer where to turn if they really want, you know, the full acceleration of getting the right people on, getting the right guidance and getting the right tools to build. I think you're really building something special. So yeah, I'd like to congratulate with all the success that you've already had. And even though you're nearly at the breakpoint, even I think in the next few years, you're going to be absolutely smashing it, and you're on the right path to really do big things and really help drive this Bitcoin hyperization, which is needed and wouldn't be possible if we would have initiatives as PlebLab, because doing things on your own is so hard, and being isolated and in your own room, and kind of there's so many points to kind of pinpoint and connect that, you know, you can actually physically go to a space and brainstorm. And as humans, we are, you know, essentially communication creatures, and we want to be a part of a community. Like it's so much easier and so much more fun and engaging by being present with other people than doing something from one side of the world. And this was my question is, and I don't know if this is how you operate now, but I guess you only work with companies that are physically there that can come into the office, or you also have projects or down the line you're looking to help out projects which are, let's say, on other continents and other side of the world.
Yeah. So we did something last year called Top Builder, where it was this initiative of, I put it plainly like this because it's easier to understand for Bitcoiners, but it was like the top chef for Bitcoin, which was like, how do we find the top builder, right? It was, I said it like that because it was kind of funny, and a lot of people understood right away what it was.
Yeah.
But sneakily, like behind the scenes, it was actually kind of like a cohort. And we had weekly meetings, weekly workshops, weekly mentor schedules and stuff like that. We would talk about what we're building. 120 something people. We got it down to 71. Then we got it down to 31. And then every couple of weeks, we would cut it in half. So by the time we got to startup day in March, those top six teams were presenting in front of VCs and people that had money. And so we're going to try to see if we can do that again this year, because I think this is the correct way of going about things when it comes to, like, how do you help people from afar, like get help with the Bitcoin community, with PlebLab, and the whole has benefit the whole ecosystem, and not only the builders. And I think this top chef, top builder formula actually works, because it allows people to not only participate in PlebLab and get synced into our community, but it also allows them to go to, you know, these other people to get grants for that same project, or funding for it, or even go to another accelerator that's maybe closer to them. And I think it actually works better doing it like that. So I think in that sense, that's our kind of like online initiative, if you could say. If there was like an online version of PlebLab, it would be the top builder, but it would only be from like December to about March every year. And then the only thing that's stopping us really from doing it more often, or doing it at a higher level, or even going even much further with it, is just money. Like at this point, the only thing that's stopping me from kind of getting PlebLab to where I think it could be is just money. Like that's it. Like if not, we would already be at hyper Bitcoinization in my head.
Well, it's only a matter of time, low time preference, right? At some point, even if the money doesn't come in, the money will be there.
Yeah. And that's where I'm at with the constraints that we have and the people that we have. This is the fastest that I can go.
You know,
that's kind of where I see it. We also do this thing called an online builder pass, which I think works for people that are doing a full-time job and then want to have one foot building their kind of own Bitcoin company or Bitcoin project. And I think that online builder pass works, and we charge a small fee for it every month. And that's been able to help some people hopefully get to moving over to Bitcoin only full-time at some point. So we've been doing that, and a couple people have signed up for it. So hopefully that'll kind of, keep going, and then more people.
And where can you find that on the PlebLab website, or there's like a dedicated?
Yeah, if you go to PlebLab.dev, if you click on that thing that says Online Builder Pass, they can sign up there.
Okay.
That not only helps support us here at PlebLab, but it also we help support them with what they're building.
Amazing. And we'll definitely include it in the show notes. I mean, because I'm sure, and I'm also one of those candidates that is kind of looking in the next 12 to 24 months to deviate from my fiat mines. I have two fiat jobs, and then I work on my podcast in my spare time, apart from having raising two small children and being a husband. Wow. It's a lot of things that I'm juggling, but I would love to work full time on Bitcoin, and you know, my path personally that I'm thinking of, is, which is not the most attractive. You mentioned it, your latest project, which is kind of education, gamifying it. I want to steer, because I'm a non-techie guy. I'm a very social guy, and I love, you know, having, as you can guess, communicating with different people. And my kind of take is to help and be this kind of, not education, but more of a mentorship, like guiding new people to the space of getting their non-KYC Bitcoin, how to set up, you know, your e-commerce store and accept payments, how to set up your own node, how to set up a multi-sig if you're a small business and you kind of don't want to hold the keys for it. But I'm not sure how to do it. You know, there's so many different avenues and a lot of people have tried it before and have failed. So I'm also personally on seeking, like, what is a community that I could plug into that could, you know, I could bounce off ideas and I can show stuff as I'm building and telling me, is this, you know, am I on the right path or not? So I think that's a really good initiative that you've started. And I'll definitely link it in the show notes because I'm sure I'm not the only one that's looking to leave the fiat mines and, you know, want to work on their own Bitcoin projects and have great ideas. So there's a fantastic resource. You know, you're not on your own and trying to figure out if it's going to work or not.
Absolutely.
Which I think it's a really good idea.
I think there was, it's interesting that you said that because there was somebody that came in maybe about 2 years ago who had a similar idea around what you just said. But they were going to create this sort of app. Hopefully he's not doing it or else he would have told me by now. He probably just had this idea. He was showing a lot of us, but it was basically going to be like a rabbit hole.
Okay.
And it was basically going to show where you're going to start. Then you're going to go here. Then you're going to go there. And as opposed to kind of doing an education route, you're kind of getting people down the rabbit hole. And then every tier is potentially how you would sell a service or a code to refer them or something. But that was the idea that he had. I'm not sure. I don't think he ever made it, but when you were saying that, that's what it kind of reminded me of something
like that.
What
popped into your head? Well, yeah. I was also like, you see, at the same point, like, I like that idea, but then we're all different and we all have different needs. So it's like, it's really hard to do like one, maybe a course or like a gamified like tunnel thing where, you know, you kind of lead everyone through. It's more of like, what is your position? What are your problems? Like, what do you want to do? And it's more of, you know, there's some amazing companies out there. And I've had recently Tony from the Bitcoin Way and even, you know, BTC Sessions has launched their Bitcoin mentors. But like, I want to do it more kind of as a friend out there that helps you down that path. Now, how to do it, there's a lot of different ideas. And then the other aspect is, which I guess you've also been finding it hard to optimize, how do you charge for it, right? I would love to give all that information, but then how do I, you know, provide for my kids, you know? But then I don't want to be overcharging, and how do you know what to charge? And then people might be turned away from it. So do you go down the kind of the donations route? Like you give them all this information and, you know, people pay what they think you value. Like there's a lot of like questions to get it right. And as you mentioned, Carl, like that's, education is not the most exciting thing. And a lot of people are like, I don't need it. You know, there's so much like free stuff on YouTube. I'll go down it. Yeah. But then you realize like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff, but like there's too much stuff. If you don't know what you're looking for, it's a waste of time and resources. So it's very hard. And to me, it's a little bit sad that people don't value education. Because if we want to get people to adopt in Bitcoin, education is something you definitely need to do. May that be studying your own through books, through courses, through going to meetups and talking to different people or getting calls with different mentors. It's something you got to do. I guess fun aspect is something that needs to go into it. So maybe, as you mentioned, like the idea that someone previously had, like going through a rabbit hole or like doing something more enticing and visualizing, I think is another aspect, because just having like calls is a little bit like everybody already on their day jobs has numerous Google Meet calls and you don't want to, in your time off, jump on another call and talk about Bitcoin. So maybe, you know, something through a more visualized thing. But then again, you need resources. You need to build all that stuff. It's an interesting take to it.
And like the interesting thing is like when you tell VCs that you're doing education, they just roll their eyes.
They're like never going to make money.
Never going to make money. Get out of here. So I would say it doesn't mean that it can't work. It's just that no one's figured it out yet. And I also think too, like when you think about charging things, like just how much would you pay? Like,
true.
Right? Like how much would I pay for your app? I think maybe if I got some podcasts and maybe if it was more geared towards who you are and like your kind of community and what you're building. And if I have more of you as opposed to education, like what's Suzy's approach to education and how does he do things? And to me, that's something that I would pay for because it's coming from you as opposed to it's just a generic education app, if that makes any sense. And I think that's where BTC Sessions nailed, right? With his consulting thing is it's like, oh, whoa, I get to talk to Ben for like an hour? Hell yeah. So I think also, I think there's that. So I would say, like, whatever it is, make sure you put your thing in there, whatever that is, whatever.
For sure.
Well, I think with the podcast, kind of it's my next transition, because as the pod grows, and I've been consistently since last July, every Thursday there's an episode that comes out. Wow. I'm a one man show. I do everything. So getting the guests, recording, post production, distribution, which is not as great as I wish I could, but as I mentioned, I do a lot of things already. So the fact that I've been releasing consistently, not a single week missed, even Christmases and Easters and everything, there is one episode that comes out every Thursday at 12 p.m. UTC time. Like, I think in the next year or two, I'll have already a sufficient amount of followers, which already is decent. Like, I'm getting around 1,000 to 2,000 downloads a month, which is not bad for something I do all on my own. And then kind of, I want to cross-market it through the podcast. So, you know, through the listeners that are listening, you know, if you want to book on, jump on a call with Gigi and, you know, get a hands-on, your personal take on, you know, taking your Bitcoin into self-custody, setting up your e-commerce shop or whatever it is, I think that that's the best way that I could funnel it. And it's more kind of like catering to the people that are already fans of the show. As you said, like, those will be more willing to pay, even if it's, you know, 30, 50, 40 bucks to get that time with me, where it's like, oh my God, maybe, okay, not BTC sessions level, but still, I've got some people that message me and, you know, are big fans of the show, and I'm sure they would love to jump on a call and get guidance and my, you know, opinions on things. And I would love to do that. So kind of my path that I'm building towards is really give out this content, help, you know, orange pill, or I like to call it orange seed, because it's not a pill that you take and everything changes. It's a seed that you plant, and you got to water that seed. You know, you got to keep on learning and doing your proof of work to get to it, and helping, you know, fellow plebs get on board and set up their own, you know, Bitcoin businesses, store their wealth. And another aspect is inheritance, which I see a lot of these advisories are doing now, which I think is super important, because life is so precious and fragile that next thing you know, you do the wrong step and you're hit by a bus, and bam, you've been stacking for a decade and your family has no idea what is all these electronics in daddy's wardrobe, and like all that Bitcoin is lost forever, where, you know, it could set your children and grandchildren free forever. And I don't particularly like these, I have nothing against it, but like all these Casa solutions and Unchained, and I think there are good examples that we have, but I don't think it's like the best thing, where you're paying a yearly membership for them holding your keys, where, you know, if you could just do like your own personal little set course for your family and having it fully, you know, what your balance is and how to obtain them. I think that's a much safer way and much more kind of reasonable, because, you know, most people that are in Bitcoin and let's say in their 20s and 30s, they need to pay those, I don't know, just random number, $200 a year for the next 70 years. Like, holy shit, like, why are you paying all those sats for someone holding your keys, you know? So, and I don't really see that many people giving like easy solutions for inheritance, even though it's kind of it's a sensitive topic, but it's very, very relevant. And I've had personal partners from my past experiences that passed away, and, you know, the spouse is left in a position where it was even worse. It wasn't just Bitcoin, it was like a whole collection of shit coinery and trying to figure out on which exchanges it is and where it is. And it's like, I don't want anyone to be going through those, you know, hard times. So, you know, there's a lot of components and easy things that could be done. It's just finding it the right way. And I guess doing a general educational course is definitely not the way to go. It's more kind of this personal take. And as I grow the brand and Gigi grows with it, that's kind of the next step that I want to go into. And then I'm just open to helping out, and similar to what you're doing, is whatever help I can give to, you know, startups that want to do their own Bitcoin thing through the network that I'm building, you know, through the amazing guests such as yourself and everyone else that's been on the pod. All it takes is one call or one email or one Noster note to connect you with the right person, and, you know, you suddenly got all this access to it. And I wouldn't charge for that. Like, that to me is part of the package. If you want to take 1 hour of my time, it comes with my knowledge, my experience, my network, and everything. And then, you know, just be humble and stack sats. And in the future, it's well off, going to pay off. So I guess I just need a recurring source of income, which just, you know, pays the bills to feed the family, and then just stack sats. And in the future, it's all going to pay off.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just taking a low time preference approach to it. I actually started doing podcasts and all that stuff in 2017. So like, I think it was October or September of 2017. And I was doing them on the weekly. And I didn't stop up until like Austin Bitcoin Club in 21. So I was doing that for like four years. And then now I'm doing Plub Lab for another 4 years. And that was on top of like doing my fiat job. So
I've been at, like, over 200 episodes.
Yeah. So I've been at this for like 8 years doing Bitcoin crypto stuff. That's where I would say, like, and I'm just barely getting to a point now where it's like, I feel like I'm about to, you know, get to the next level. That makes any sense, but it's still all crash and burn, right? So that's where I would just say is like, sometimes it takes longer than you really think. And it's okay if it does and just
keep on pushing.
Just keep pushing. As long as you don't don't give up and you don't stop, like, just being consistent is more important than anything, even if it comes out crappy.
Sure. Being
consistent is like, that's all that matters.
Well, I mean, in my case, like, it's not like that I've already left my fiat jobs and I'm kind of banking on, you know, getting some money from sponsorship. Like, to me, if anything, I've got like a nice big library of incredible stories to share with my girls once they turn 18, you know, and they can listen to what daddy was doing while they were deep asleep at this time of the recording. And, you know, I'm a true believer that, you know, Bitcoin is going to change everything, and it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. So I totally agree with you, Carl, like with everything in life, if you just carry on being consistent and improving just 1%, you know, every week, that compounds. And I feel a big difference listening to some of my first episodes from a year ago. Like, they feel like very amateurish. And I'm sure in a year's time, I'll be listening to this episode and, you know, thinking like, wow, like, I could have done such a better job. It's just consistently growing with it. And at some point, and hopefully, as you know, in the next epoch, as you know, really decouples from the cryptos and we really go to different heights and purchasing power. I don't know, and I don't want to speculate on the number, but like, if it's something significant, then, you know, it gives me that chance of letting go of, you know, what I dedicate my time to and really, you know, enjoying every single moment of my time, what I'm doing. Because these podcasts, like, nobody's forcing me to do it. And it's not like I'm doing it for any monetization. I love what I'm doing. Like, the fact that I'm sitting here today and speaking with you, Carr, like, there's nothing but joy. And to me, I think that also resonates through the listeners, that there's no hidden agenda. I'm not pushing no hidden projects. There's no shilling in it. It's just a friendly conversation and seeing how you got started and what you're doing in a space. And I think that more people that get involved and are not scared to take that leap, and sometimes it is scary, but I really advise everyone listening to, you know, just go with your heart. If you don't like what you're doing, no one's forcing you. You're not a slave in chains. Maybe you're a slave of debt, but you can also change that around by the decisions you make. So, you know, follow the heart, do the right thing, and have a low time preference. I guess that's my advice. But to sum up this episode, and that's what I kind of, the closing question is, what's some advice you would give to like individuals who are just starting out their own Bitcoin journeys? And what would you say is the right way to kind of go at it in 2024?
Gosh, I don't know the right way. So I'll say that for the beginning. I would say I only knew the way that I did it. I guess the best advice I could give, if you're looking to, I would say two things. Like, if you're looking to just get started in Bitcoin and learn from Bitcoin, I would say listen to podcasts like yourself, people that don't have aligned interest in anything. Just listen to pure Bitcoiners who run a pure podcast like yours, GG. I would say go out and find those people. The second thing is, if you're like that same person trying to get into Bitcoin, find some Andreas talks, Andreas Antonopoulos talks, and go through YouTube and just spend like a good day just going down that rabbit hole. Cause that is what convinced me, gave me the conviction to keep doing what I was doing. And even to this day, I go back and listen to some of these stuff and I'm like, oh, that was so far. So those two. And then if you're looking to build on Bitcoin and you're unsure what that means or unsure how to go about doing it, come find me at Plub Lab, come to Austin. Move to Austin, or just, you know, find me online, shoot me a message, and we can schedule a call and talk about it. If that's not possible, still find somebody that you look up to in the Bitcoin space and reach out to them, because I would say about 90% of us are really good individuals. Very few are like complete assholes, but for the most part, everybody's pretty cool. So that's what I would say is, like, if you're looking to build a Bitcoin company or looking to do something on the Bitcoin builder side, come to Plub Lab, find me in Austin. We should talk. If that's not possible, then just find somebody that you look up to in the Bitcoin space and reach out to them. If they don't reach back out to you, don't take it personal. They're probably just really busy with life, whatever they have going on. And that would be my two things of advice.
It. Well, no, and just to add to it, like from my experience, you know, reaching out to people that would love to come on the podcast, everybody's like very willing to help and everybody's is accepting. And as you said, Carl, like if you don't get a response back, don't think that, you know, that person is ignoring you, but either they're super busy or their inbox is full of, you know, spam and other bots. And you know, so just be consistent in that too. Keep following up. And at some point you will get a response, positive or negative. Yeah, you will get a response.
I would say after two or three responses, if you don't hear anything after two or three, then maybe they just don't want to talk to you.
True.
But the first one, probably like just give it time and then shoot them up another message. And then by the third message, they should get back to you. It's just everybody's extremely busy and extremely understaffed in the Bitcoin space.
For sure. Yeah. And as I say, that the only thing more scarce than sats is your time, right? And you better be cherishing and taking advantage of that time. I guess the final thing I would ask, and you kind of mentioned it, to reach out to you and PlebLab, what is the best place to for our listeners and people that want to reach out and kind of get involved? Where's the best place for them to get in touch with you?
Yeah, I would say just go to pleblab.dev, have all the links there. If you're interested in talking to me, just car@pleblab.com is my email. That's the fastest way to get a hold of me. You can also message me on Noster through DMs, just @car. And then on Twitter, just @pleblab, you can send a DM there. Don't check Twitter very often, but if you want to get to me faster, it's just car@pleblab.com. That's me.
Amazing.
Yeah, I would also just mention real quick, we launched Pleb TV a month ago.
Oh, nice.
This is our first foray into the entertainment space. We want to bring... Yeah, go ahead.
Where did you launch it?
We launched it, like, it's still kind of in the small alpha version of it. It's not even beta yet, but we wanted to get out there to the masses. And so we're slowly starting to create that thing. And basically what we want to do is bring lightning to the living room. That's how I mean, that's my North Star.
Nice.
Like, what's the point that we want to get to? It goes back to this, like, how do I bring lightning to the living room and how do we make it electric, right? So that's what we want to do with that. It's just going to take a really long time to get there, but we think we can get there at some point. And if you're interested in any of the content that we make at PlebLab, check it out, plebtv.com. And we'll be dropping more iterations of it. We'll be adding more things to it. And over time, we think this will be the way people will consume content.
Amazing.
Through this way. And so just wanted to shout out that. And then also the other thing is we'll be doing another hackathon here at TapConf. So TapConf is a technical conference here in America. Mm-hmm. And we'll be there in October in Atlanta doing the hackathon there. So if you're interested in doing the hackathon, go to the TapConf GitHub and apply, and you can do the hackathon with us, and it'll be a ton of fun.
Amazing. So, well, there you have it, guys. Get involved. Don't feel don't feel any pressure by getting in touch with PlebLab and Car. It's O'Neill. Welcome. And you know, just do the actions instead of sitting back and crying, why is life so bad? Make the right choices to change it and put that proof of work into action.
Yeah, I would say also too, like, don't feel, when I first came in the space, I was messaging and emailing everybody. I made a fool of myself. So don't feel bad if you like don't make a good first impression. Like, everybody goes through that process. Some worse than others. I remember me sending a message to, I won't name them, but to this day, they still won't let it go. And I'm like, dude, it's been 4 years. I didn't know anything. So, but some people will remember your first email to them and hold it against you.
Well, we live and we learn. It's not the worst. At least you go through to that person. So that's the most important.
Yeah. The fact that they still remember it, hang it over my head. I'm like, well, what did you want me to do? I was shooting the hip, you know?
Amazing. Car, once again, thanks so much for taking the time. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I wish you all the best of luck with everything you have going. I'll definitely include all the links in the show notes from what we discussed for people that want to, you know, get involved and help out and get some guidance too. And like I tell all the guests of the show, our Bitcoin stories, this is not the end. We're only getting started. So we would love to have you back next year as PlebLab develops and see how Pleb TV is coming along, and God knows what next will be coming on with the Chef Project and all the other amazing things you have going on. If you ever want to come on the show, or there's something you want to discuss, or there's some topics, you have an open invitation. You're always more than welcome, Karin. I would love to have
you
back. Yeah, definitely. We'll be looking forward to having you back sometime next year. And yeah, wishing you all the best with your projects.
Thanks, Gigi. Been a pleasure.